This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
All you hellbound atheists and happy heathens, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio, inviting you to spend the next hour with us to learn about some irreverent things.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And today, beware the Ides of March.
Don't beware.
We'll be talking about being afraid, being very, very afraid on today's show, later in the show. I'm a former minister. I'm a preacher who saw the light. I came to free thought through a long, torturous process of finally growing up, like many of you did the same thing. You know, you were childishly committed to a faith, and you fought your way through it. And congratulations, and you've joined the growing segment of the American population that has no religion, who are free from religion. Our group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, is comprised of atheists and agnostics and other types of non-believers. And it was really fun earlier this week at the University of Wisconsin to go to the lecture that Richard Dawkins gave.
In Madison.
What was the Memorial...
Distinguished Lecture Series.
At the Memorial Union.
Part of his three-week tour in this country.
And the auditorium seats 1,300 people with a balcony that goes all the way up to the rafters. And every single seat, it was stuffed to the rafters with rapturous applause and cheering and laughing, just a very, very solid, happy time for atheism and free thought this week when hearing Dawkins talk about arguments against God.
And with all of his eminent credentials as an evolutionary biologist, it's a great thing for him to go around trying to enlighten people about why he is an atheist and why he does not think there are rational reasons to continue to promote religion. He's very, very gracious. He's going to be working on a new book. He told us to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the publication of On the Origin of Species by Darwin.
Next year.
Which is next year. So this might be his last speaking tour in the United States for a while till he gets that book finished.
And his book's going to be about evidences for evolution. And he points out in his speech that his book about God is really just a book about science because it is a scientific question.
This week, there's been a lot of news. Dan, who you're the former minister, now an atheist, you're going to talk about the biblical roots of torture, given this unfortunate failure this week of Congress to override Bush's veto of the bill against torture.
That's why I said, be afraid, very afraid. And later in the show, we're going to honor Albert Einstein's birth date, which was earlier this week. Einstein rejected a personal God and religious dogma, and we're going to talk about how to be good without God. You can't. Do you think you can?
Of course.
Okay.
Many of us think, in fact, that you can be a better person without God, and that the idea that your morality is dictated on high by some kind of arbitrary authority, rather than being found in ourselves or agreed upon by society, is actually morally bankrupt.
Well, let's talk about that later. First, it's time for Free Thought Radio's weekly Theocracy Alert.
Earlier this week, the current occupant attended and addressed the National Religious Broadcasters 2008 convention in Nashville, as they say down there, Tennessee, on March 11th, in part paying homage to Billy Graham.
He has led countless Americans to the grace and goodness of the Almighty, and each of you performs the same mission every day. You renew the poor in spirit, you bring comfort to those in anguish, and you show millions the path to salvation and the peace of God. I thank you for guiding the faithful. I thank you for strengthening America's families. I thank you for standing up for our values, including the right to life. And I appreciate your firm belief in the universality of freedom. I believe, and I know most of you, if not all you believe, that every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth has been given the great gift of liberty by an almighty God.
It sounded like that word universality was too big for him. He had to make two smaller words out of it, the universality. Of course, if you were raised religious like I was, you recognize in that speech, there's a lot of code words in there. The National Religious Broadcasters is Christian in its orientation.
So he didn't talk about Jesus when he talked about Almighty, but he was talking to Christians as a Christian. It was very clear. I mean, wouldn't it be great if he would come to the Freedom from Religion Foundation convention or the many skeptical and atheist groups out there and address us about how we are helping to promote family values in this country,
yeah,
and as we are.
And he was quoting Jesus, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." He used a lot of the phrases that those people would recognize. He used the occasion to inveigh against what he called an effort afoot that would jeopardize your right to express your views on public airways, to wit, an effort to reinstate the fairness doctrine repealed under the Reagan administration.
And boy, do I miss that fairness doctrine. I remember the good old days when I even was on television or radio because of the fairness doctrine, where I was able to get up and, for example, counter an editorial on a local TV news station. And since that time, of course, the Christian right hate radio has taken over. And even in his speech, Bush talked about those people, such as Limbaugh, and he talked about the religious broadcasters, and they are dominating the field, thanks in part to the fact that we do not have a fairness doctrine. And then, of course, most of his long speech was kind of a cheerleading war, and with the implication that the United States wars are blessed by his God.
Of course, fairness is not fair to the corporations who want to make as much money as they can, is it? Speaking of religious blessings, Republican presidential candidate John McCain has been endorsed by Texas evangelical leader John Hagee, who leads a 19,000-member megachurch in San Antonio. Hagee, of course, is best known for his outspoken support of Israel and his scenario of a blood-soaked apocalyptic war between the East and the West, leading to the return of Jesus Christ and the fulfillment of what he thinks is biblical prophecy. Brian, can we play a little bit of that audio we have of Hagee here?
When 50 million evangelical Bible-believing Christians unite with 5 million American Jews standing together on behalf of Israel, it is a match made in heaven.
And of course, what Hagee, that was a speech from last year, I think, not when he was endorsing McCain per se. But what Hagee didn't say is that, gee, they might be standing together, but the Jews don't get to go to heaven, do they? McCain accepted this endorsement by the evangelist Hagee with great pleasure, and in his own words, McCain said he was very honored and proud of the endorsement, but U.S. Catholic groups are not so happy that McCain's been campaigning with Hagee, whom they regard as an anti-Catholic. McCain, by the way, also campaigned in Ohio with Rod Parsley, head of an Ohio megachurch. He's one of those so-called patriot pastors, who's been criticized for mixing religion and politics and also for their very controversial high financial lifestyles. McCain has referred to Rod Parsley as being his spiritual guide.
Okay, it's not just Republicans. This look at the presidential race wouldn't be complete without mentioning how Democratic candidates were reaching out to evangelicals in Texas. The Dallas Morning News reported earlier this month that Barack Obama met with 150 Hispanic evangelicals before the primary there at the University of Texas at Brownsville. And this is what Barack Obama said. "I know that sometimes people are hesitant to mix church and state, but it's also important to remember that Jesus was an advocate. He wasn't afraid to go into the temple and throw that table down, drive the money lenders out. He was passionate about justice, not just peace, justice?
Well, it's kind of sad to see that all the presidential candidates are having to kowtow to evangelicals and court their vote in this manner. You know, to say that people are hesitant to mix church and state, and then not to come out and say, me too, I'm hesitant, I believe in separation of church and state, as he has said in the past. But Dan, as someone who knows the New Testament well, what was your take on that particular speech?
Well, that episode when Jesus picked up a whip and threatened violence against these people who were basically changing money so that people could give money as alms into the temple, wasn't anything to do with justice. It was because he thought the ego of his father was offended because there was money changing going on within the temple. In the Bible, there's nothing about human beings having the right to be treated with fairness and with equality and with dignity. It's all about the ego of the dictator not being offended.
And wasn't Jesus in quite a rage when this, isn't that
yeah,
how
he
was portrayed?
Yeah, he was angry. Yeah, you know, the Bible says he was the Prince of Peace, but many times he looked at his disciples with anger. He cursed a fig tree. He caused the death of swine. And here's a case where he picked up a whip and actually scared people within the temple because they were just basically doing a little bit of free enterprise.
So I think it's time once again to play the famous words of candidate John F. Kennedy during the 1960 presidential election.
So it is apparently necessary for me to state once again, not what kind of church I believe in, for that should be important only to me, but what kind of America I believe in. I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference, and where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president who might appoint him or the people who might elect him. I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source.
Those were the good old days. That was JFK. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back. Lots to discuss, to talk about the Bible and torture, to talk about the rejection of a God, immortality, and dogma by one of history's greatest scientists, Albert Einstein, and to talk about how we can be good without God.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Coming up on Free Thought Radio, we'll be talking about morality without religion, confronting perhaps the greatest myth and prejudice against atheists and other unbelievers, that morality stems from God or religion, therefore atheists must be immoral. Is that true?
No, and what's really immoral is that last Tuesday, the House failed to overturn President Bush's veto of a bill that would have prohibited the CIA from using waterboarding and other torture interrogation techniques on terrorist suspects. And that leads us to Dan's Pagan Pulpit.
And now it's time for Free Thought Radio's Pagan Pulpit with ex-Reverend Dan Barker.
Torture stems from human nature, of course, but it's been legitimized and exaggerated by books like the Bible. The God of the Bible threatens and commits violence. And since we are supposedly created in His image, is it any wonder that this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy? Many believers would feel justified in acting like a chip off the old block. In Matthew 10, Jesus reportedly said, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." In Matthew 13, he said, "The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of this kingdom all things that offend, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Revelations calls it a lake of fire. In Luke 12, Jesus said, "Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him." Be afraid, be very afraid, the Bible says. In Matthew 18, Jesus said, "If your hand or foot offend thee, cut them off. It's better to enter life maimed rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. It's better to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into hellfire." Proverbs says, "The blueness of a wound cleanses away evil. So do stripes, the inward parts of the belly." A stripe is a whiplash. The Bible encourages violence. Of course, the Inquisition, the history of instruments of torture and the killing of witches stem from this brutal, violent book. Since the Bible promotes torture and violence as a way of serving the supreme government, the kingdom of God, we can say that any system of thought that makes its case with intimidation by threatening violence is a bankrupt morality.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back to defend atheists and unbelievers from the age-old attack that we are by definition immoral. We'll end this segment with a quick Rhymes for the Irreverent by the great lyricist and atheist Yip Harburg.
Realist. For what we are about to receive, O Lord, 'tis thee we thank, said the cannibal as he cut a slice of the missionary shank.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome back to the second half of Free Thought Radio.
We've been talking about the biblical roots of torture, this idea that if it's virtuous to torture somebody everlastingly in hell for not believing as you do about religion, how easy it is to justify torture on this planet. We've been talking about the incursions of religion into politics, and now we want to devote the second half of Free Thought Radio to debunking an old bugaboo, something that just persists as one of the most major myths about atheists and other freethinkers, and that is, how can you be moral without God? How can you be moral if you have no religion? And Dan, you have a couple of events coming up, a debate on this very issue.
I do a number of debates, and a lot of them on morality without God. How can we be good without God? And I'm giving a speech next week in at Bates College in Maine, in Lewiston, Maine.
On the same topic.
On the topic, how can we be good without God? And it's the second most popular debate I do, besides the existence of God. And, of course, religious people like to show up and claim that we need an absolute morality or else human nature is so bad that we're all just going to run around and kill and steal and rape and commit all sorts of violence. And thanks to Christianity for curbing this instinctive violence that we have within us. When actually, we can point out that it's the other way around. As that pagan pulpit pointed out in the first half of the show, the Bible itself is a very poor example of morality.
A behavioral grab bag. You can open it up and justify just about any atrocious thing imaginable.
And basically, the moral principle of the Bible is might makes right. You better do it or else you're going to be in trouble with the big dad who's got the power. And it's an infantile morality, really, because daddy's going to spank you. I better be a good little boy or girl. And also you can look through the entire Bible and see these really poor role models of characters who were praised as leaders, and yet their lives were atrocious lives. And you can also point out, before I discuss how you can be good without God, also point out that even religious people don't have it. You take any social issue of the day that morally that we're struggling with, like abortion rights or stem cell research or what else, doctor-assisted suicide, gay marriage, you name it. You find believing Christians who pray and go to church and read the Bible, read the same Bible, they fall on both sides of those issues. You find them marching in the parades on both sides. So even Bible believers don't have an absolute moral guide. It all comes down to their own predilections. But what do we do as non-believers? How do we know what's right and wrong? And I think religion has overly complicated morality. Like, it's this big deal with a big capital M. How to be moral? Oh my goodness, how are we going to know? And I think most little children even realize that morality is just a simple matter of avoiding harm. Try not to cause harm in the world. Try to not hit somebody. Don't steal from somebody. Don't hurt. And of course, harm has nothing to do with flattering the ego of the parents. Harm is a natural thing. Harm is something that it's hunger, it's cold, it's hurting, it's pain, whatever it is, it's a lack of shelter. It's something that we can analyze rationally and say, oh, there are ways to avoid or minimize this harm.
Well, of course, if you're brainwashed to believe that the greatest sin is disobeying God, that this causes harm to this supernatural being and to yourself because it hurts your soul. If your mind is so blocked, if you're so indoctrinated, how do you reach out to that person to explain why their idea of morality is really not what it seems to be?
Well, you can show them that this must be a pretty weak, insecure God, father figure they're worshiping if he's so easily offended by us. I mean, how can the creator of the universe be harmed by us? And what kind of harm is that, actually? It's not a physical harm.
Well, for example, in the Bible, it's a big deal if you don't circumcise your son. I mean, there's this story about what happens when Moses sort of neglects to circumcise his child and, you know, God's about to, what, kill him?
Yeah.
Until his pagan wife, Zipporah, you know, does it with a stone? I mean, why would that be considered moral? Well, why do we look to that Old Testament,
yeah,
or
exactly,
that Hebrew Testament to say, gee, is on the scale of harm, what's circumcision got to do with it?
Well, I mean, that was like the mark. That was the sign that you were set aside, as you were one of God's chosen people. And of course, there was the one time when the Israelites were carrying the Ark of the Covenant. You know what that is, that had the commandments in it. And
I've seen the Steven Spielberg movies.
Well, in the Bible, they tripped, and these townspeople came out, these farmers came out and said, oh, the Ark of the Covenant. So they looked at it, and then they worshiped God, and they prayed, and they gave, you know, they were so proud to be there with the tablets of God, but you weren't supposed to look at it. And so those farmers were struck dead by God because they looked at it. And 50,000 more people were struck dead. Why? Because they looked at some...
Yeah, just like Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt because she looked behind her.
Yeah. So it's really an infantile morality that says, do what you're told because the dad is, you know, because the parents don't want to be upset. But what we free thinkers say is that, well, the way I frame it, and there's different ways of framing a humanistic or secular morality, and different atheists and agnostics might phrase it slightly differently, but basically it boils down to this. You can be called a moral person or an ethical person if it's truly your intention to act in ways that minimize harm in the real world. So if you're trying to feed the hungry, if you're trying to avoid torture, if you're trying to teach people to learn to better their lives, if you're trying to minimize parental neglect or whatever, if you're doing something in the world that minimizes harm, if you're a doctor, you know, if you're trying to...
Well, we can't all be professional do-gooders.
No, but of course, but if it is your intention to be the kind of a person who wants the world to have less harm in it than more, then by definition, that's what morality means. It's not some big capital M thing in the world. And the way to do that is use your mind, use reason. Look at your actions, and you can use history as a partial tool. Look at your actions and say, what are the consequences of this action compared to the consequences of that action? Which of them will result in less harm in the world? Because you can't get rid of all harm. Sometimes you have to cause some temporary harm in order to... I think we would all agree that it's not a good idea to poke a baby with a needle unless that baby needs a life-saving injection.
Or an inoculation.
Yeah, we will cause a smaller harm because our intention is, in the big picture, to minimize harm in the world. And the only way you can do that is not by following rules. You can't... There's no rule in the Ten Commandments that says, thou shalt not poke babies with needles. There's no, you can't pull out of your back pocket a list of rules. What we humanists and atheists use are principles, the principles that we use our mind to think, does this action result in more or less harm? then this action. And the only way to do that is to study, to examine, to use reason, to get facts, to be informed about the consequences of what does this chemical do if I spray it on my field.
And the one thing that I would say, and this comes up continually when you and I are interviewed on other radio shows or by media all the time or by crank mail or people calling, is that it seems to me that religion puts dogma over humanity. When you look at the major issues of the day that are controversial, it's, you know, let the stem cell research, oh, we must placate the Catholic Church and its dogma
over the
embryonic stem
benefits.
Cell research. Yeah. And we must try to get around that. And they've wasted so much time trying to come up with other ways of doing something other than embryonic stem cell research, which might someday be very fruitful. But why did we waste that time? Or if you look at something like abortion, even, where you put this idea that there's a soul that's imbued in a zygote above the rights and humanity and life and emotions and well-being of a girl or woman who is unhappily pregnant. So we are, if you are worshiping dogma, unthinking dogma, this God on high giving you this ultimatum, rather than looking at people and the harm and good to people from your actions or your laws, then you're in trouble.
And that's the opposite of morality. If morality is minimizing harm and you turn off that function, that ability to think situationally, then you're acting either amorally or sometimes immorally, like the Pope on birth control. If the Pope were a moral person, he would advocate for birth control because that would lessen misery in the world. But his dogma is more important to him than the suffering of millions of people in a overburdened world of overpopulation. He's too religious to be a good person.
He's too religious to care about what his doctrines mean for real people, the misery and the unneeded deaths. And now, there's also this whole idea that it's the contrary view. If you're immoral, if you're an atheist, you're automatically immoral. There's this other view that if you're religious, you're automatically moral just by virtue of your belief, not by what you do. It's not the idea that it's what you believe that makes you good and not what you do. And if you look at history, if you look at the history of more people being killed in the name of a belief in a God than for any other reason, I think that's a very good way to debunk that. But also, look at all of the crime committed by religionists in this country. This most religious country is full of prisons who are full of born-again prisoners.
And very few atheists in prison.
And very few atheists, as we've seen looking at the FBI statistics. And so I think that in our country, we have a very confused sense of morality where we have this idea that we have to have a knee-jerk reaction that religion is automatically good, and yet look at the harm that's done in the name of religion.
We atheists acknowledge that there are many good religious people in the world, but we think people should be judged by their actions and not by their beliefs.
And one of the great proponents of rationality and humanity, the man who named the United States of America, who set off our revolution, Thomas Paine, had a motto, "The world is my country, to do good is my religion." I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back, but let's listen to a few words by Thomas Paine.
The world is my country, to do good is my religion. No prophet or priest, no Bible for me, my mind is my own church. We are all one human family, wanting love, fairness, and freedom. This simple creed is all that we need to enjoy peace on earth.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. This is our concluding segment, and we've been talking about morality without religion, being good without God. And I think that we can turn our attention now to this record of achievements on progressivism and reform brought about by people who were primarily and personally free from religion or were other wise unorthodox in their views on religion, which isn't to say that if somebody does a good thing, that means that their religious beliefs must be true. But it certainly goes a long way to disproving this idea that all atheists are immoral when you look at their contributions of atheists and agnostics to civilization.
Who's to say that someone like Bertrand Russell did not have meaning and morality and purpose in his life? Charles Darwin, what he did to the world at the end of his life, admitting that he was an agnostic. Steven Weinberg, the atheist scientist.
Nobel laureate.
And physics, who helped us to unite the electroweak force. And not just scientists, creative people. Richard Rodgers, who wrote all those musicals, The Sound of Music and all the wonderful. He was an outspoken atheist, a very happy, productive man. Johannes Brahms, Brahms' Lullaby and all the symphonies that he wrote, was a humanist agnostic.
Verdi.
And Giuseppe Verdi and Berlioz. And you can find on our website a list of songwriters and composers at Free Thought of the Day.
At ffrf.org, we have a Free Thought of the Day with a listing of all of these people. But, for example, if you look at reformers, the abolitionists, the feminists, you start with Thomas Paine, you go up to Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who changed life for women in America today with the suffrage plank and her demand for equality for women. And Susan B. Anthony and Margaret Sanger, who brought women birth control. And just the list of reformers goes on and on. People who were reformers because they were really critical of religious dogma that was suppressing civil liberties.
And it's not just that they were free from religion. Some of them were outspoken in their criticism of religion, thinking that religion was actually hindering moral progress.
And so I think there's time to squeeze in a quick Freethinker's Almanac paying homage to one of those great contributors, those freethinkers, and that would be Albert Einstein, whose birth date anniversary has just passed.
Albert Einstein was born in Germany on March the 14th, 1879. That's Pi Day, by the way. Do you know what that means? March 14th?
Mm-mm.
Pi is 3.14, so 314. Einstein was born on Pi Day. His 1905 paper explaining the photoelectric effect, the basis of electronics, earned him the Nobel Prize in 1921. His first paper on special relativity theory, which was also published that same year, changed the world. 1932, Princeton named Einstein the head of the mathematics department. He traveled back and forth between the continents. After the rise of the Nazi Party, he made Princeton his permanent home, becoming a U.S. citizen in 1940. He was a pacifist during the war. He stayed a firm proponent of social justice and responsibility, chaired the Emergency Committee of Atomic Scientists, which organized to alert the public to the dangers of atomic warfare. In an article for the New York Times in 1930, he wrote about his views on religion and the wonder of the cosmic mysteries. He said, "This insight into the mystery of life, coupled though it be with fear, also has given rise to religion. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their primitive forms, this knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. In this sense, and in this sense only, I belong in the ranks of devoutly religious men."
Now, Einstein created a lot of confusion by his famous "God does not play dice with the universe" metaphor. And he believed in what he said was Spinoza's God, who reveals himself in the orderly harmony in being, not in God who deals with facts and actions of men. He actually was and considered himself to be an atheist. He was an unbeliever. He advised that in their struggle for the ethical good, teachers of religion must have the stature to give up the doctrine of a personal God. And Dan, why don't you read one of his more famous quotes against religious belief?
"I cannot imagine a God who rewards and punishes the objects of his creation, whose purposes are modeled after our own. A God, in short, who is but a reflection of human frailty. Neither can I believe that the individual survives the death of his body. Although feeble souls harbor such thoughts through fear or ridiculous egotism, it is enough for me to contemplate the mystery of conscious life perpetuating itself through all eternity, to reflect upon the marvelous structure of the universe, which we can dimly perceive, and to try humbly to comprehend even an infinitesimal part of the intelligence manifested in nature. And that concludes today's Freethinker's Almanac.
And today's show.
You can hear all of our past shows where they are archived, and you can listen to them as a podcast. Just go to our website, ffrf.org/radio. And if you have a question or comment you'd like to have on the air, call our talkback number. That number is 608-204-0422. That's 608-204-0422.
Ask for a complimentary issue of Free Thought Today. That's the newspaper published 10 times a year by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Or for any information at ffrf.org.